Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, everybody, to Not Another True Crime Podcast. I'm Sarah Levine.
And I'm Danny Murphy. You know, we're your partners in wine, crime, time, and threads, if you're there now. I mean, I just joined and I'm now obsessed.
Honestly, same. I feel like it's kind of what TikTok did when they first launched, where they're like, you have two followers, but you're going to get 4,000 likes on your thread. I'm like, I'm hooked.
I'll take it. It is like home ec. I'm threading my GD heart out.
I know. I'm like, well, something needs to be called a needle in this app somewhere. And I'm thinking on that.
There we go. There's something. Okay. That could be the likes.
I guess I should get the podcast on there.
I mean, it's also hard. It launched at the time where I feel the ability and energy to do anything is hard.
Agree. It's actually kind of wild because I feel like this is really, I think, in my opinion, the first time that a social media app has launched and also everyone has joined it on that day. Like, usually it kind of takes a while to pick up steam and you can join in the early days, but it's not like a whole rush of like everybody joining and being like, hey, folks, like, here's the party. Like, you never go to a party when it starts and everyone's already there.
Because it's like, Kesha, the party don't start till I walk in. Threads is exactly. Like, no, everybody's here. I feel the rush to it is because every day this week has been the recorded hottest day. I mean, like, everybody is in debt. Everybody, like, we're like, what is, how much time, how much sand is left in this hourglass? Let me not wait.
It's true.
Also, just keep it going.
It's so true. Also, like, Twitter, I feel like, is getting worse by the day. And, like, at least Meta also sucks, but has some kind of proven concept that we know it's not just some, like, random, like, we're like, what the fuck is a Mastodon? Like, it's not just a random app that you're like, I guess
that's,
I'll try
true
it.
That is true. Well, I mean, it kind of is fitting for us because we're trying to thread some truth. We're not going to solve it, but we're trying to thread the pieces of a crime this week, Sarah, that you found. I don't know how you found it, but you found it.
How did I find it? I know that someone has messaged about it before. So DM me your request at Not Another True Crime. I read the Instagram DMs. I do a little daily trivia. It's a fun time. We are blowing up on the gram.
It's a moment.
Guys, I don't know if you've noticed. It's bumping right now.
I know. Shout out to everybody helping that happen.
Yes. So I don't know. Yeah, I found it there. And you know me, I'm always Googling like unsolved crimes, like 1900s or whatever. So today we are going to be talking about the Villisca Axe murders. We're going to take it back to 1912 in a small town called Villisca, Iowa. And in the 1910 census, it had a recorded population of 2,039, which is literally the size of my high school.
That is bumping into someone you know every hour on the hour. That is nice. Living in a town like that, I always say I would want to live in like a Gilmore Girl town, Stars Hollow. It's my nightmare.
No, you definitely don't. I mean, I read a lot of books where they take places in small towns where everyone literally knows everyone. It's hard to like think that that's real. But when your town is 2,000 people, like,
you know, everyone and everybody else knows.
Exactly. And you probably can't keep a secret, except someone did here, which is actually quite amazing.
Yeah, that is true.
And actually now the population is even less. There's about 1,000 less residents.
What?
That could be a whole history, but I'm sure like some big industry that used to be there kind of, you know, closed up shop or something. I don't know. That's just my guess, but I'm sure obviously something happened there. And it's also where on June 9th, 1912, an entire family and two of their guests were brutally murdered with an axe. So let's back it up a bit. We are talking about the Moore family. Josiah Moore, I also saw him referred to as Joe or JB, so
okay,
keep that in mind. Got some nicknames.
Belieber. Yeah, we got some Beliebers.
He was the patriarch and a well-known businessman and a church worker in Villisca. And he was, I'm going to quote this, manager of an implement concern, which I Googled, and I think it has to do with the railroads.
Makes sense for that time.
Totally. It's spelled C-O-N-C-E-R-N. It's spelled like concern. So, I mean, I don't know, unless he's just getting paid to be worried about things, in which case, like, where do I apply? I'm the VP.
Sign. I've been doing an unpaid internship for that company for decades now.
Yes, for my whole life of implementing concern. So he and his wife, Sarah, had four children, Herman, 11, Catherine, 10, Boyd, 7, and Paul, 5. And also with them the night of the murders were Lena and Ina Stillinger. They were 12 and 8, respectively, and they were the daughters of J.T. Stillinger, who was a wealthy farmer who lived nearby, like a neighbor, kind of.
Okay. So they had a whole little family, a family affair and friends coming over.
Yep.
And the night before these murders, let's get into this too. So it was June 9th. It was a Sunday. So the Morris took their children to the Children's Day service at the Presbyterian Church. Classic Sunday, I'm sure, in Villisca, Iowa. And it was, yeah, and it was kind of the end of the year presentation for the kids. Why did, is it because it's always hot in the summer? Is that why schools are always, like, everything's always done in June? I wonder, I need to Google that myself.
Because of, like, the, I don't know, the harvest or something?
probably something with that.
Oh, I have no idea. I'm just.
Daylight
I'm
savings.
Just, I'm just literally making stuff up. Daylight savings.
The Stillingers, like Sarah said, came with them too because they were spending the night. And Sarah co-directed the Children's Day service and all the kids did a little speech. So they were kind of like, obviously this is in this community of the Children's Day service at the Presbyterian Church. The Moors were known. They were regarded, etc. After it ended, people stuck around and hung out until at least 9:30 p.m., which I feel that's
my nightmare. Oh, like, my God.
That's an all-day affair. That's a rager for a church.
It really is. It's like, I feel like, oh, my God, when synagogue is finished, you want to get the fuck out of there and your mom is talking to her friend and you're like, I'm going to die. And imagine if she was doing, which with Jews could easily happen where they're just talking until 9:30 p.m., but I would be like, ah.
No, that's what you want to say to the day service. Like, no, you guys, like, Christ died. Christ has risen. Christ took a melatonin. Like, he's asleep again. He's not coming back. He's taking a nap. He's taking a siesta. Go home. The Moors then walked home 3 blocks, sure, high on socialization. Maybe they were all extroverts. So they were really feeling this 9:30 powwow.
I mean, that's late for the kids. My mom, you know, never. I feel like I was at least in middle school before I could stay up past 9 o'clock. Like 9 o'clock was like the boogeyman, I feel like.
Oh, I was a family of night owls. I didn't go out anywhere, but I watched like Seinfeld at 11 p.m. when I was a kid.
I love that.
They really got lit here because they had cookies and milk when they got home.
I love that.
Which I like, okay, go off. And then went to bed. Sometime after midnight, however, though, someone picked up Josiah's axe, which he kept in the backyard, and very gruesome twist, bludgeoned the entire family and the guests to death. Neighbors didn't report hearing any cries, and the door hadn't been locked. So a lot of just kind of like, what is going on here?
A lot of questions. And so the next day, Josiah's clerk was concerned because he didn't answer a call. And the neighbors also got worried because the Moors were usually up and at him pretty early, and one neighbor noticed that the horses were neighing a lot and thought it was weird that nobody was tending to them like they normally would. So, you know, they're having a late night, and they're getting up early in the morning. So that is respectable. So now I have seen some conflicting reports about, like, who first found them and how they gained access to the house. So according to one account, a couple of neighbors tried to get in, but couldn't. But they couldn't get in through the door or the windows. So they called the town marshal, Henry Horden, who broke down the door. But according to another account, Mary Peckham, who was one of the neighbors who had noticed that they weren't, like, you know, doing their rounds like
normal. Tending the horses.
Yes. She called Joe's brother, Ross, who was the town druggist. Which, again, I feel like we've talked about the druggists. Great title.
I we should bring that title back for whoever wants to use it for whatever you got to do. Yeah.
We should. So according to this account, Ross arrived around 8 a.m. and had a spare key, so he was able to get in the house. And then he saw two figures in the back bedroom covered in a sheet and blood on the bedspread. And so then, according to this report, Ross was the one who called Henry Horton. And then from there, it's possible that, like, maybe they couldn't get back in and he had to break down the door. I don't really know. There's a little bit of discrepancy. And so when Horton went through the house, he reportedly told someone nearby that he saw somebody murdered in every bed. And that was the quote, somebody murdered in every bed. And there were just all types of other weird things that they found. So the axe was partially cleaned and it was left leaning against one of the walls of a downstairs bedroom, the one where the Stillingers were found.
It's so bizarre that they kind of cleaned the axe.
Right. I know, because I'm like, they didn't have DNA back then.
No.
They did, I think, have fingerprints. I feel like we learned that.
That's true. But it's like, we'll get into it, like, everybody, like, the crime scenes were just kind of like hangout places back then, too.
Yeah.
Like, there was, yeah.
This is what's really weird. The killer left a 4-pound slab of bacon next to the axe. Like, what? He was getting ready for a snack and then just decided, eh.
He's like, I'm in ketosis. Yeah.
I have no idea what that's about. They also found an uneaten plate of food and a bowl of bloody water in the kitchen. Like, maybe the killer had washed their hands.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, how can you eat after that?
I don't even know.
Then the killer looked through the Moore's dressers to find things to cover the mirrors with. And they also covered the glass in the entry doors. The victims were all found in their bed with their heads covered with, they called it bedclothes, which is just like sheets, blankets. And nothing else was disturbed in the house. There was no money taken. So it was ruled out as a robbery. And here's something that's just really not what you'd expect. So, like we said, the victims were found with their heads covered, but their skulls were bludgeoned 20 to 30 times, but with the butt of the axe, like the,
like,
not
the
blade. Yeah, the other side. So it's believed that the killer first killed each person with just one fatal blow and then returned once they were already dead to deliver additional blows.
That's just an added layer of twisted sinister.
So horrifying.
Oh.
And then they also concluded the killer probably swung left-handed. And they figured this out partially because the ceiling of Josiah and Sarah's bedroom had, like, gouge marks on it, like from the blade of the axe when there would be the upswing. And I know, it's, I don't even understand. They didn't think that there was a sexual element to the crime, as nobody appeared to have been abused. So they were like, no robbery. There's not a sexual component.
This seems a hard thing to seem like, what is the motive? Like, what is the point?
I mean, it seems so personal. Like,
yeah, for
imagine,
the entire family, also the entire family, but then also just two guests too.
Right.
And they're all children, like so many young children too.
And also just killing them and then going back.
Ugh.
So then their funeral was held on June 12th. So that's 3 days later in the town square, and thousands of people came. The National Guard even had to come and block the street for the hearse. The funeral procession had 50 carriages. And because this was 1912, according to Smithsonian Mag, about 100 people trampled through the crime scene. You know, we've done this before. The curious townspeople, the authorities, like, they're inviting, not even inviting, but like, the neighbors are coming to take a look. Every person on the police force is walking through.
It's just like, everyone's like, oh, it's this house, right? Let's just walk around and, like, look around. And remember, the people even, like, would, like, take things, touch things, really ruin everything. I know when I was even reading, people were like, oh, there were two cigarette buds. And then people were like, were those left by a potential suspect or were those left by viewers? Like, you can't even rule anything in or out because of how it all goes down.
Right. They were not wearing those little foot booties back then.
Not at all.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. What I love about Shopify is basically how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. I know we use Shopify here at Betches, and honestly, anyone with any kind of business could really benefit from Shopify. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/betches, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/betches now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/betches.
But even though there was like no real ideas of like the why and the crime scene's also messed up, of course there were a few suspects. One of the first, Frank Jones, who was a businessman who sold farm equipment, a state senator, and an active member of the Methodist Church. People really had a lot of hustles back then. Because I'm like, why?
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know any senator who's selling farm equipment.
I feel like, is that, well, let's say pre-2016, I'm like, is that allowed nowadays? Because Jimmy Carter had to give up his peanut farm, you know?
That's true. I feel like now everyone's like, is that all you do?
Yeah.
Run. Run as fast as you can. Sure.
We don't his Twitter bio, his Threads bio is probably lit.
Oh, I can imagine. So Edgar Epperly, the leading historian of the murders, someone whose name you were born to be a historian.
Edward Epperly.
Edgar Epperly? Yeah, you're in a book from birth, and God bless. So Edgar, who's the leading historian of the murders, says that Villisca was heavily split along religious lines, which, okay, now
we got an old school feud right here.
Old school. It's given Northern Ireland and Ireland. The Methodists claimed Jones was innocent, and the Presbyterians were convinced he didn't.
Because if you'll recall, the Moors were active in the Presbyterian church.
So they were just kind of like, that person doesn't go to our church?
Yes.
Josiah Moore had worked for Frank Jones for 7 years and became a star salesman. But he left in 1907, 5 years before the murders, because he didn't like the hours, and I don't blame the man. 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., 6 days a week.
I mean, those are like my work hours, so I don't blame him.
right? Yeah, right. Like, I'm also like, how are you making someone work? There's no slack on the phone.
6 days a week for like over 12 hours? Fuck that.
Oh, Lord. So Moore, set up a rival business.
Oop, a cheater brand.
A cheater brand.
Another one. Last week, we talked about the laughing gas cheater brand.
That's true. So really, they're all around town. And he nabbed Jones' biggest client, John Deere.
Which I was like, okay, I've heard of this. Wow. Like, good for him.
Good. Oh, John Deere is like, I feel like that's one of the few things in this realm I know.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, it's still around, still kicking. Like, damn.
Yeah, it was also rumored that Moore had an affair with Jones' daughter-in-law.
Oop.
Donna. Where are you at, Donna?
Okay.
So, sorry, Donna, we're airing your businesses right now. Apologies.
But she aired her own business, so it's like, whatever, it's fine.
That's true. So, Apparently, Donna got around and everyone knew about it because she would arrange her affairs over the phone. So I say that's just a girl with a plan and a planner. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, okay, she's making the time of it.
But just wait.
But all the calls in Villisca had to be placed through a phone operator.
But I'm like, damn, there's no caller operator privilege. These operators.
That's
like,
true.
How is that on her? Like, that should be on them. They're supposed to, they should have some kind of discretion. I don't know.
The girl code.
Yeah.
Like, Donna's like, wait, now she calls back. Like, is this? Were you working Tuesday? Why do you hate me?
Right.
So anyway, there was a little vendetta in the Jones and Moore realm. People obviously didn't really believe Jones committed the murders himself. He was a 57-year-old man.
They were like, he was but an old man of 57 years. There is no possible way he could have swung this axe. I'm like, okay.
And I'm like, you know what? Let me just go quick. Chris Maloney's 62. So... We all saw his sock ad. So,
yes. Oh my God. On the Instagram.
I don't know if 57 is a perfect alibi, but I guess if you're but an old man, it kind of infers a lot about your characteristics.
Well, it's just like funny what they thought of physical characteristics because it was kind of the same with Lizzie Borden. They were like,
oh, true.
Oh, she's a girl. She can't swing an axe. And I'm like, okay.
I know. It's like, I love how they, the way they can just rule things out. But they did think that with his money and influence, he could have hired someone to do it. So this was the kind of prevailing theory of James Wilkerson.
I will say, to be fair, the life expectancy in the U.S. was 51 and a half for men. So, like, he was elderly.
Oh, that's okay. That's fair.
Like, by those numbers, he was... on his deathbed, basically.
Okay, we'll give him that. So, but yeah, James Wilkerson, who worked at the Burns Detective Agency. I do love the vibe of that. Wilkerson announced that Jones had hired a hitman by the name of William Mansfield to murder Joe Moore. But like, yeah, what's the press release for that?
No, literally. I'm like, how do you just announce a theory as though it's true? I mean, I know people do that today, but you know what I mean?
But there wasn't TikTok then.
What does that mean? Right? I'm like, I could announce that I'm like, I don't know, a supermodel. That's not real. Unless I can manifest it that way. I don't know.
But if James Wilkerson says it is, then it is. Apparently, Mansfield was the chief suspect in the axe murders of his own wife and child and in-laws in 1914.
Ooh.
Okay. Adds a layer to why people would be suspicious of you.
But I kind of feel like if it had happened before,
I would
be more inclined to think that. But afterwards, I'm like, I don't know. That seems like you kind of did some reverse engineering.
Yeah, and it's almost like because he had a rock solid alibi for the night of the Moore family. So it's almost like he was like, oh, let me take that idea. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was working a few hundred miles away at the time, and payroll records prove it. And checks usually don't lie.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's that fruitcake case we did.
Oh, my God.
Actually, they ended up telling the truth. But Jones became the subject of a grand jury investigation. Although he was never formally charged, the investigation killed his political career, which I guess is, thank God, he has some side hustles.
Good, yes. Good thing. Although the church isn't paying him, I'm sure, but at least he has his farming business. So the other suspect was a man with many names. He is Reverend Lynn George Jacqueline Kelly. And he was a reverend, but also, this is a crazy sentence, but also a known sexual deviant, according to Smithsonian Mag. Yeah, I'm like, that really took a turn. And here's an example. So he once placed an ad in Omaha World Herald seeking a, quote, girl stenographer typewriter. And the ad said that this stenographer typewriter must, quote, be willing to pose as model for book pictures as required by artists, end quote. And one woman said that she replied to the ad. She received lascivious a lascivious multi-page response. And he told her she'd have to do her typing in the nude.
Huh.
Gross.
Okay, yeah.
I feel like this is how they harassed before dick pics.
Deeply, truly.
And she ended up like suing him, or he ended up getting in legal trouble for it. And it went before a court. And a judge described this letter as, quote, so obscene, lewd, lascivious, and filthy as to be offensive to this honorable court and improper to be spread upon the record thereof. So the judge wouldn't even read it in the courtroom because he didn't want it on the record because it was that nasty.
That's when you know it's intense stuff. Thereof.
Yeah. My God. That is like get help. Oh, my God.
Oy.
So now we're okay. So Kelly left. Here's another thing. He left Villisca on a train the morning right after the murders, 5:19 a.m. And there were reports, this elderly couple reported that he told them that eight people were found dead in Villisca while they'd been sleeping. But this was before the bodies were even discovered.
Hmm.
That is super suspicious.
Really, you're like that. The math isn't adding up in his favor there.
It's not. He also was left-handed.
Okay.
Which was, they had thought that the axe was swung that way. And he'd also caught being a peeping Tom a few days before the murders.
Okay. So the more things are okay.
It's kind of adding up. And he had attended the children's day service the day of the murders, which, like, why are you as a single man attending a children's service?
Single weirdo, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Super okay, weird. So
that's very, very suspect from him.
Totally. And some of the townspeople believed Kelly basically saw them, the Moore family and the Stillingers at the service, and then became obsessed with them and followed them home. And on top of that, after the Moors were found, he had sent bloody clothing to a launderer in a nearby town. And he returned to Villisca a week or two after the murders and basically tried to insert himself into the investigation, posing as a Scotland Yard detective.
No, sir. What?
I know. I'm like, why would they bring England into this? That doesn't make any sense.
Why would you try to add an accent to your escapades right now?
He was English.
But English is not Scottish.
Yeah, no, I don't know about that. So he poses as a detective to go inside the Moore house. The only thing, if we're going to talk about physical limitations, he was 5'2 and 119 pounds. So I'm like, this man is my size, basically. And I don't know. I think axes are quite heavy, and that seems more legit than being 57 years old.
That's true. But wasn't Lady Gaga's documentary 5'2"? And she's strong. Yes.
I was like, was she swinging axes in there? I didn't watch it.
She's swinging. I feel like, I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't know if 5'2", because everyone would be sleeping at this point. So it's not like he had to overpower them.
That's true.
Just because a lot of things are leaning his way. So I don't know. Be a strong 119.
It's very strong. So, strong case. So, in 1917, they got a grand jury together to hear the evidence of his alleged guilt. And he confessed, writing in a statement, I killed the children upstairs first and the children downstairs last. I knew God wanted me to do it this way. Slay utterly came to my mind, and I picked up the axe, went into the house, and killed them. Which, yikes.
Okay. That's a statement.
That is a statement. However, he later recanted this confession, and the couple who claimed that he told them about the murders on the train hours before the bodies were discovered also changed their story.
Like, why now?
I don't know. So he went to trial, and the first jury deadlocked, and the second jury acquitted him. And to date, he's been the only person ever tried for the murders.
That's insane.
So I don't know. I wonder, like, why they acquitted him. I guess just because he recanted his confession and that one couple changed their story.
And they're like, they're just like, oh, guys, remember all that evidence that points to him in that written statement he did? No, he changed his mind. So good to go.
Yeah. But then I'm like, why would that couple make that up?
I know.
Just to get like in the papers, like that's fucking weird.
That's very weird, but also something that could have happened, very much so.
True.
And a final suspect, though, that we will discuss today is Henry Lee Moore. So after a 2004, so much later, documentary came out, a new theory emerged that it was the work of a serial killer.
Hmm.
So interestingly, there was a series of axe murders in the Midwest in 1911 and 1912. This pattern was first noticed in 1913 by Special Agent Matthew McClautry of the Justice Department's Bureaus of Investigation, the FBI before the FBI. So who knew? Before the FBI, it was bi. They were, okay. Happy Pride, Bureau of Investigation.
I was going to say.
Go off. Slay utterly. In September 1911, a family of six were killed with an axe in Colorado Springs. And in Colorado Springs, Blanche Wayne was killed in her bed with an axe. Her head was later covered by bedcloths, and the killer left the weapon at the scene after stopping to wash his hands. So very identical. Okay. Very, very identical to what happened.
That is interesting.
There were also a lot of similar incidents like this, like in Monmouth, Ellsworth, Kansas, Powella, Kansas, and finally, Columbia, Missouri.
Mm.
The Columbia, Missouri murder victims were Mary Wilson and Georgia Moore, her daughter. And it was believed that Henry Lee Moore, Georgia's son, who had trouble with the law, killed them in order to get the deeds to the family house, which is motive.
Yes.
And then some added similarities to this. In 8 of the 10 murders, the axe was left at the scene of the crime.
Hmm. But, like, what are you going to do with an axe?
I know. Because it's like, you also can't just, like, run around with a bunch of axes.
Yeah. Like, I think it's kind of worse to take it with you because they're not, like, the killer is just using the axe that these people had. And I feel like everybody had an axe at home at this point.
Everybody had an axe.
So, like, it's worse to leave with it.
That actually makes sense. And also, you can't run away really fast with an axe unless you might.
Facts.
Which is probably why in 7 of the 10 cases, there was a railroad nearby.
That's interesting.
That's interesting. Maybe to hop back on the train and get away.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's how you're able to get from place to place and no one's kind of detecting you because you're already gone.
And 3 of the murders happened on a Sunday night. So that's the one that feels more just coincidental. But the other two elements, the railroad is also very interesting because that could lead to all of this other locations. And on top of that, in 4 of the cases, the victims' faces were covered. And in 3 cases, the murderer washed their hands at the scene.
Hmm.
And in 5 of the cases, the killer had stuck around in the house after the killing.
Interesting. The faces being covered is like, that's the most, I think, similar.
Yeah, I think that is definitely the most similarities.
They also weren't sure about Henry Lee Moore just because, like, he had a clear financial motive for killing his mother and grandmother. So it's just like, why would he then just kill all these other random people? Like, it's not really clear.
I know. It really doesn't make sense. No.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. I kind of think this reverend did it. Like, he seems really, really sketch.
It seems very, I do think, even though the serial killer does have a lot of the similar characteristics, I do agree with you that this reverend, maybe again, also, I like that they were like, that, like, with his statue, like, Frank Jones probably hired someone to do it. Maybe the reverend hired someone if he's 5'2".
That's true. That's true. I could also see the, like, covering as some kind of, like, repentance. I watch too much Criminal Minds. That's how you know. Like, guilt, you know, of covering the mirrors so you can't look at yourself and covering the victims so you don't see what you've done.
I could see that where it just kind of, okay.
I don't know. That's my Criminal Minds input for the day.
I appreciate it. So, like Sarah was saying, the Moore House has become like a huge, giant tourist attraction in town with a lot of added layers to it. Like, you can stay there overnight, which I don't think I would really want to do. And I guess if people are choosing to kind of live that vibe, okay.
100% no. No, thank
no.
you.
No, 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 no. And Day Tours opened in April of this year. So it is interesting. This case happened like over 100 years ago, but they're keeping the tourist attraction. And I would say the new crime that is going on in that house is that for a group of 4 to 6, it costs over $400 to go, like $428.
But I'm like, that's actually, if it's for 4 people, I think that's pretty cheap. But I don't know if it's $428 a person. I think that's just what it costs.
Well, you're going to go in there. There's no answers to the case. They're just like, so this is where this happened. Good night.
That is what it is.
Like, I guess, you know what? But if you choose to pay for that, then you're paying for that. And that's what you want to do. You also have to bring your own sleeping bag and pillow.
Which I'm like, okay, that part is the crime. But then again, like, I wouldn't want to sleep on blankets that.
That's true.
Like, I was going to say other people have slept on, but then I'm like, well, that's a hotel. And I've done that before. But
yeah,
that's just, I'm good on that.
Good on that. And also good at the 9:30 a.m. checkout.
Yeah, what the hell is that? I feel like that's truly like Blair Witch Project. Like, if you make it through the night, you got to get the fuck out like at sunrise.
That's I'd be like, the second the clock strikes midnight, I'd be like, all right, guys, we did it. Goodbye. But then I wouldn't want to be around there at night outside.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm good on all that.
No, so catch us never, ever there, but catch us probably doing another older case sometime soon. But there's also been, I've been looking at some things in the news that we might have to dive into deeper. So.
Yes, definitely.
So, of course, if you guys have also been looking at stories that you're like, unpack this or just shout about it, because I want to shout about it while listening, always let us know in the Facebook group, Not Another True Crime group.
Yes, or DM us on Instagram at Not Another True Crime.
And you can follow me on Instagram and Threads at Kashmir Danny, Kashmir with a K.
Oh my God, same at Sarah Lameem. And thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back next week.
Not Another True Crime podcast is produced by Jorge Morales Pico, Sean Kilby, and Rebecca Sosmacat. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Sarah Levine. Be sure to follow at Not Another True Crime on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send all of your emails to natc@betches.com.
Betches.